Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. That's it. No more January 24. I hope you liked it. We're a 12th of the way through 2024 already.
How about that? Already?
Oh my God. We'll be broadcast on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Tick-borne illness update, dysautonomia, post-vaccine, all that stuff. So the latest is I had an okay week. I had a great float a week ago Sunday, followed by restorative yoga, and before that I had acupuncture. So I had a pretty good week until Friday. Thursday, I think I just overdid it. I probably ate too much and worked too hard. And so Friday, I felt very tired. And then Friday evening, I went ahead and I did some nice yin yoga. I did Epsom salt baths. And then Saturday morning, I felt fine. And so I felt pretty good on Saturday. And then I think what I did wrong on Saturday is I overdid sugar. And so starting on overnight Saturday into Sunday, I got tremors again. So that was no fun. So this is this up and down. And fortunately, it happened on Sunday. And Sunday, I didn't really have anything to do. So I was able to manage it and rest and take care of it. And so what I did for the tremors is I took a binder, and the binder had zeolite and activated charcoal and something else, maybe aloe and fulvic acid in it. And then I also took chlorella and took that during the day. I also took some Alka-Seltzer Gold with lemon in it. And I took 5 milligrams of lithium orotate. And after a while, I relaxed and I felt better. And then later, things started to calm down. And then I got into the Epsom salt bath. And after the Epsom salt bath, I took a restorative yoga class. And then I felt a lot better. I had mild shakes this morning, and then they went away. So right now, I'm doing pretty good. So so I just didn't have any dessert last night, and no sugar today, and no caffeine. And we'll see if that helps. And, you know, got lots of rest. It's just day by day. And whenever the tremors come back, I'm like, oh no, this is going to go on forever. I don't know what I'm going to do about that. And you may, if you have long-standing illness, you're like, you feel great for a while and then you have a setback and you're like, all right, what am I doing wrong? What do I have to change? Do I do more of stuff? And so when I get these tremors, I start looking things up and wondering, should I add this? Should I add that? And should I add the other thing? Or should I just treat it as a setback and keep going with what I'm doing. So I had backed off on my dose of my herbs in my cocktail, my 8 herbs that I'm taking in the Limerita, if you will. And I went back up to full dose. So I'm taking, once again, 3 scoops of the modified citrus pectin and 3 droppers each of all of the different herbs. And so considering whether to add some other stuff, I will probably put the, make sure I continue to take the cinnamon and clove essential oils, may add oregano. I'm not sure. I'm thinking about that. So Dr. Zhang is somebody who studies Lyme disease, and he found that in vitro that clove and cinnamon oil and oregano kill persister cells for Lyme disease. And Dr. Marty Ross, who is also a well-known naturopathic or a natural medicine, functional medicine doctor who treats tick-borne illness, he also recommends, he has a product that he likes to recommend that has liposomal clove, cinnamon, and oregano oils in them. So I have the separate oils, so I will probably continue to take those. And he recommends those for Bartonella. He actually recommends them for Bartonella. And then, of course, for Bartonella, Bartonella is the one that classically affects your nervous system and gives you tremors even more than Lyme disease. And Bartonella absolutely has biofilms like Lyme disease does. Those they're polysaccharide covers that they build around them so they can hide from the immune system and they can just hang out in your body for as long as they feel like. So if you take things like natokinase or lumbrokinase or serrapeptase, it can help to break those down. So I'm continuing to take natokinase, considering lumbrokinase. And it's just exhausting to take all these pills all the time. So some of you may be able to relate to this, that you're just always figuring out what else you need to do or if you need to do anything else. Definitely the rest and the Epsom salts and the binders help to get the toxins out of my body, so I stopped shaking. So that was nice. I was going to start adding back some exercise too. And I have been getting on the bike, just indoors because it's been yucky weather out. And I meant to get on for like an hour and change yesterday, and I wasn't feeling well in the morning. So I only got on for like half an hour, 20 minutes or something, and took a yoga class. So lots of yoga, lots of gentle yoga, restorative yoga, yin yoga, and things to calm me down. And like that, it's just frustrating. I mean, I am sort of thinking about, do I want to take that leap and take some kind of antibiotic? So when you're dealing with Lyme and Bartonella, that's a nasty combination because you have to go after both of them at the same time, or maybe one at a time. And the things that help to treat them, one of the drugs that goes after Bartonella is azithromycin, which is an antibiotic that I have taken before just for bronchitis. And I do well with it. It doesn't mess up my belly too much. I do take probiotics when I take it. And they recommend doing, I probably talked about this last week, methylene blue. And methylene blue is this compound. It's pretty expensive. I don't know if it's prescription or not. And it's pricey to use ongoing, whereas something like azithromycin would be covered by my insurance. And the thing with methylene blue, even though it's effective, does definitely have side effects, like you could get nausea and lightheadedness and digestive upset. But it stains all your porcelain blue, because your urine and your poop, it turns them blue, and it's a dye. So it will dye your wherever you go to the bathroom, you're going to dye the toilet, and it's hard to get off because it's a dye. So I'm trying to avoid that. And understanding that herbs like that I'm taking, like Japanese knotweed and cryptolepis, are both known to kill persister forms of Bartonella, and so are the essential oils that I'm taking. So probably I just have to be patient. Do I just need to be patient?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Because I have a bad day, and then the next day I'm not so bad. Like, I'm not so bad today.
Yeah.
I know. But it's,
patience is not one of your better.
No, attributes. But it's like I want to figure. I really would like to be well. Imagine if you had an illness that made you wonder if you were going to make it through your workday, if you were going to be able to exercise, if you're going to start shaking. It's. And I was talking to Nancy, my sister, last night about the fact that I've curtailed my activities, which is classically something that people with chronic illness do. They may not go out with their friends as much. You know, a friend will ask them to go out, and I've done this. I've had people ask me to spend time with them, and I've been like, well, wait till I'm feeling a bit better. And I don't go, and I don't make plans, because I just never know how I'm going to feel on that day. And another way to do it would be to make the plans and then cancel if I'm not feeling well, which is lousy. On the other hand, when people came to the house, I enjoyed that, and I did okay with it. So maybe I should do a little bit of going out. So I try to go out once in a while. It's better if I just go out by myself, and then I can go for as long as I like. Just go to the store or go do something, go to the yoga class, because then I feel like I'm not affecting anybody. But my sister said to me, are you becoming agoraphobic or claustrophobic? And I said, it's not really agoraphobic, because I'm not bothered by going outside or being in crowds or being in public or being in an open space. Not the open space that bothers me. The fear is that I'll be out in an open space, I'll be out somewhere, and then I'll be symptomatic and I won't be able to take care of myself. It's the fear is about becoming symptomatic and being stuck somewhere. That's not really agoraphobia. She said, what about claustrophobia, that you're in a place that you're trapped, you're in a place you can't get out of? Yeah, but claustrophobia is the fear of being in an enclosed place that you're afraid you can't get out of. It's not agoraphobia and claustrophobia are specifically about being in the locations. I don't care about being in the location. I was able to do a float in the pod, and I was okay. But the problem is being somewhere and being worried that I'm going to get symptoms and I won't be able to take care of myself, which is why Ron wanted me to go to the basketball game on Saturday night. And I said, I can't do that, you know, because it's I'm sitting upright in like the worst position for my body, and sitting like it's the same as sitting at a desk and having to sit there for 3 hours at with lots and lots of people around, and, you know, not being sure. I wouldn't want to be there and say, Ron, I'm not feeling well. We have to go home. So I didn't go. That's not something I can do at this point. It's really kind of sad. So, and some of you who have chronic illness may relate to this, that you curtail your activities and, you know, your friends wonder where you are and you don't do as much. You don't see as many people because it's better to just stay home and manage your symptoms as they come up. It's really not fun. So doing this while continuing to run a business, that's the other problem, that I'm continuing to work, and work is stressful. And so if that's you, if you're continuing to work, you know, you wonder day to day, you're wondering if you can work. And of course, there's a financial piece to not being able to work. And you know, some people become disabled and they just have to figure out how to not work. I'm not there yet. Let's hope I don't get there. When I'm not working, I have to really curtail my activities to make sure I'm okay to last through a work day. It's hard. It's not fun. And so meanwhile, I'm, you know, continuing to take the different supplements and different compounds. And so anyway, so one of the things I wanted to say is that if you have Bartonella, there's a number of antibiotic courses that they recommend. One of them is the macrolides, which are azithromycin and clarithromycin, which I'm, like I said, I'm thinking about it. And they often do azithromycin with methylene blue is supposed to work really well. And I'm wondering if I could just do azithromycin, not worry about the methylene blue, because I don't want to stain the world and have the side effects, and just keep taking the herbs that I'm taking, because so if I have the azithromycin, it might give me a leg up, and then the herbs will do the rest. The problem always is when you take antibiotics, that you can create more persister cells, because the Lyme and the Bartonella or whatever tick-borne illness you have, they look at the antibiotics and they laugh and they go hide in your immune system so that the antibiotics can't get to them. And you're more likely to get persister cells with antibiotics. Whereas herbs, especially if you're taking lots of different herbs, you're hitting the microorganisms from a lot of different directions. And there are herbs that go after persister cells. So the persister cells are cells that are either persisting inside of a biofilm, that starchy, you know, that polysaccharide and protein coating that the bacteria put around them to make them hide from the immune system, so your immune cells can't get to them. And the other piece is that they insist that one by one they create a cyst-like covering individually so the immune system can't get to them. And so you can break those down with things like enzymes, like lumbrokinase or like natokinase, serrapeptase. And there are also herbs like cryptolepis and Japanese knotweed that will go after persister cells, as will things like oregano oil, cinnamon essential oil, and clove essential oil, all of which I have. So I may go back to the oregano, and I'm taking the cinnamon clove essential oil. All right. So at this moment, I'm feeling pretty good. I had a long, hard sleep last night with a few tremors, but not too bad. I'm not shaking right now. Yay. And did a little bit of restorative yoga this morning. And so that was nice. And we'll see how the day goes, because that's how it is every day. Okay, so let's talk more about aging gracefully. We were talking about that last week, and I was looking at a really interesting article, and we only got partway through it because it was very rich. There was a lot of good stuff in it. So I'll go down to where we were last week. So the first thing we'll talk about today is practicing mindfulness. What's up?
I'm aging gracefully.
Oh, good. Mm. Yeah. So Ron is aging gracefully. Just want you to know. He's going to be 69 this year. Can you even believe it?
It's just a number.
Yeah. And then next year he'll be 70.
That's another number.
So my goal is that I have to be healthy enough to tolerate a party so we can have a party for Ron for his 70th birthday.
We need a party.
And do a set. We don't have to have a party. We could do whatever you want. If you don't want a party, we won't have a party. We do whatever you want. We'd have just a few people over. Sure. Or we could go for a 70K bike ride. 70K is a lot. We could do a half 70K bike ride.
We'll do something.
We'll do something. We'll do a bike ride that involves the number 70. All right. So, let's practice mindfulness. Mindfulness is about accepting and living in the moment by focusing on the present, something which Ron claims that I am not very good at doing. It's very hard to practice to be in the present when you don't like what's going on in the present. And if what's going on in the present is your body is tremoring, you don't want to be in that present moment. However, if you can accept it and go with what's going on right now, the tremors will go away. That is something I've discovered as well. If all right, what can I do about this right now? And when I did the things that I can do about it right now, it worked. Thank goodness. When you are mindful and you are able to spend time in the present moment, then your focus can improve, your memory can improve, your stress can be reduced. You won't be as likely to react over emotionally. You'll be happier in your relationships, and your immune system will actually work better. So things that help you with mindfulness are things like yoga, tai chi, qigong, meditation, and gentle activities like doing video games that are calming. So, or doing them in real life instead of as a video game. So you could do coloring. Just get one of those adult coloring books and use colored pencils or crayons and color them. And that can be very satisfying. It's a lot of fun. We have those, but I haven't actually done the coloring. And the thing with coloring is coloring often involves sitting at a table. Well, I suppose I could sit on a couch if I had something to lean on, and that would work. So So coloring can be good. Working a jigsaw puzzle is very nice. Working a jigsaw puzzle is very relaxing. Check that. So working a jigsaw puzzle can be very relaxing.
That's weird.
Yeah. So, jigsaw puzzles and coloring, painting, drawing, anything like that.
Something happened.
And drinking lots of water can be helpful.
Sorry.
Yeah, so drinking water can be helpful, and how much water you drink can depend on your thirst, your activity level, how often you go to the bathroom and move your bowels, and how much you sweat, and your gender. And so drinking water is really important. And so when you drink lots of water, you're going to feel better. You're going to have less thirst, and you're going to be you're going to be able to have more physical activity. And to make it, if you're not a person who likes to drink water, then you have to find water that appeals to you. And if you don't like your household water, like if you have city water or something like that, then you have to find a way to make the water taste good to you if it doesn't. And the way you can do that, you can get different kinds of filters. You can get filters that are local and charcoal based. You can reverse osmosis filters. If your water is hard and you don't like the taste of the minerals, you can put things into it, water softeners, to take the extra minerals that affect the taste out. So that's another way to do it. If you drink water, sometimes it's nice to put electrolytes in it, and you can get electrolytes that are just electrolytes and nothing else. And you can also get electrolyte drinks. And I'm not a big fan of the ones that you get commercially that are full of sugar. And so it's really much better to get, just plain electrolytes, And then if you want it to taste like something, put a splash of your favorite fruit juice into it or squeeze some kind of fruit into it to make it taste in a way that works for you. And so I have people come in or like, I just don't drink. I don't remember to drink. And so that's one of the reasons to get one of those great big, those they're very popular now, those big drink containers, drink dispensers that have a lot of insulation to them. And so if you like cold water, your water will stay cold and you can drink it all day. And it's very large, so you want to try to get through that during the course of the day. I really find that if I put lemon or lime or some kind of fruit into water, I'm more likely to drink it. Not that I dislike water. We have very nice water because we have a well. If you have well water and your water tastes good, you're all set. I mean, it's good to get your well tested for minerals and also for microorganisms now and again. And I have some people who once in a while they come in and they have belly issues, and it turns out that there was something in their well that they had some kind of bacterial or parasitic influence going on in their well. And then once they got rid of that, they just stopped drinking their well water, it got better. And then, you know, if you clean out the well water, then you can drink that again. So drinking water, some people don't necessarily drink enough water as they get older. And there's that problem about going to the bathroom that people, as they get older, they sometimes can't hold their urine. And so they have to wear pads, or they can hold it, but not for long enough to make it to the bathroom. They have orthopedic issues, why it's hard to get to the bathroom. So they tend to curtail their water consumption, which can lead to more urinary tract infections. It's a really bad idea to drink less water. And the best thing to do is to find a way to drink the water and deal with the excess urination. And if you have an issue with excess urination, then you want to find out, do you have an overactive bladder? Do you have prolapse? And get that treated so that you can drink water. It's very, very important. All right. Take care of your mouth and your oral health. That's really important too. So if you don't brush your teeth well, I mean, really, you need to brush your teeth. You need to do some kind of toothbrushing. You need to do some kind of flossing. And then if that's not enough for you and you're getting a lot of cavities, then you have to do something to remineralize. And to things to chase away unfriendly bacteria. So that way your tooth health is going to go on to, go on when you get older and you get to keep your teeth. And the thing is that if you don't take care of your oral health, it puts you more at risk for gum disease, and gum disease has been linked to heart disease, stroke, and bacterial pneumonia. So how can that be? It's very simple, that if you have breaks in your gums, the bacteria that lives in your mouth can get into your circulation, and it can wind up, the bacteria can wind up in your arteries. And when you have bacteria in your arteries, then your body will create atherosclerotic plaque to protect your arteries from that bacteria and cause inflammation. And so, so a very simple way to help to prevent cardiovascular disease is to clean your teeth. And stroke is the same thing, that the bacteria that that's coming into through your gums and into your circulation can wind up in your carotid arteries and in the blood vessels around your brain. And when that happens, you can get atherosclerosis in those blood vessels, and it makes you more likely to get a stroke. So cleaning your teeth every day and getting the bacteria out and cleaning them out is very important. Bacteria, you can get bacterial pneumonia as well. You get the bacteria and it winds up getting into the respiratory tract as well somehow, probably because, you know, when you swallow, you can get some of that bacteria traveling, migrating into your trachea, and it can wind up in your lungs, and then you can get pneumonia, especially if you have immune issues. So really important to do proper oral care, and it's really important to see a dentist. And dentists can tell you give you guidance as to what you need to do. And if there are any weak spots, any cavities, any advice that they can give you, a dentist can help you with that. So dentists can spot signs of nutritional deficiencies too, infection and cancer and other illnesses such as diabetes and also gastroesophageal reflux. So dentists want you to brush twice a day, floss once a day and use some kind of a mouth rinse. And so there are different kinds of mouth rinses. Probably any mouth rinse you do will be helpful, whether it's a commercial one that you get from the drugstore or whether you get a natural one. The natural ones are just fine. I like to use a natural one that has ingredients in it, such as tea tree oil, neem, and xylitol, maybe erythritol, green tea sometimes, and other essential oils like cardamom and cloves. And all of those, it can be antimicrobial, and they're astringent to your gums, so that if there's any swelling there, it'll take them out, and of course they're antimicrobial. So they'll take out they'll kill the microorganisms that are living in your mouth. And the other thing you can do, you can get remineralizing substances. You can get regular toothpaste that has remineralizing elements in it, that has minerals and other things that can help to block up the lacunae, the little spots in your teeth. And that's how fluoride works. When you use a toothpaste that has fluoride in it, you have lacunae in your teeth, and the fluoride blocks up those lacunae. They're little tiny spots in your teeth that are depressions, and they're microscopic. And so the fluoride will get into those lacunae and block bacteria from being able to get in. And so people are not always excited about using fluoride because there's some evidence that it can interfere with thyroid function, and there's controversy around that. The idea is that if you get a little bit of fluoride in your mouth and you're not ingesting it orally, then it's not going to be an issue. That's why they don't give fluoride toothpaste to little kids who don't understand that you can't swallow toothpaste yet, because they can get fluorosis. And when you get fluorosis, the fluoride will bond inside your bones and it will make your bones weaker. And you can get, as teeth are developing, you can get fluorosis of your teeth. That's not from putting the fluoride on the teeth. That's from ingesting fluoride into the system and the teeth growing with the fluoride in it. So when you take remineralizing substances, they'll have things like sodium chloride, and they'll have calcium phosphate. Calcium phosphate is the big one that you want to get on your teeth. That can really work as well as fluoride. It's not, but it hasn't been studied as well, so it's not recommended by the American Dental Association. Fluoride has been studied by the American Dental Association, and so fluoride is recommended by the American Dental Association. It will work, but if you're not comfortable using it, you can use these other elements, and you can get paste that has some, it has CPP in it, has calcium phosphate in it, and it also has fluoride in it, and it has a milk protein, has casein in it as well. And the casein along with the calcium phosphate will help to remineralize your teeth. And so that's a leave-on paste that you can get, and you put that on after you brush your teeth, and then you don't eat or drink for at least half an hour to let it settle in. And I use a CPP paste every day as well, because as I've gotten older, I've gotten more cavities, unfortunately. I had great dental hygiene when I was a kid, and I didn't get a lot of cavities, and in the last few years, I'm getting more. So my dentist has to be on top of it. But one of the things that I did change was that I started using a water flosser. And in the interval, so, you know, I go to the dentist for prophylaxis every 6 months. And in the interval between when I started using the water flosser to 6 months later, when I had my next anaphylaxis, I only had one cavity. And that was a lot less than I had been getting. And it was small and it was easy to treat. And so I'm looking forward. I'm hoping that this time around, I will also have zero to no cavities, because I'll be using the water flosser. So are you timing me?
I have time.
Okay, great. So the other thing that you want to do is go to the doctor regularly, which some people don't do. And going to the doctor regularly can help the doctor find problems early, or before they become a real problem, or it's preventative. So you want to see a primary care physician, or even a naturopathic. A good naturopathic physician will be able to catch things for you. I've definitely caught illnesses in my patients, and, you know, and offer preventative care to my patients. And then, of course, a good naturopathic physician will know when to hold up and know when to fold up, know when to walk away. Never mind. Anyway, a good naturopathic physician will send you to an MD if they think you need one. And I send my patients to MDs all the time, especially if I want more diagnosis. And whether or not they do what the MD says, they at least they have a diagnosis, and the MD can give diagnostics that I can't do. So I'm not prepared to do electrocardiograms or echocardiograms, or and naturopathic physicians are not supposed to do gynecological care beyond screening PAPs. So if you have a condition, I'm supposed to send you on to a gynecologist. I can treat you naturopathically if you're diagnosed. So if you have endometriosis and you want adjunctive care from me, I can help you with that. But I'm not going to do an ultrasound in the office, although I can order one. I can order one and send you to get one. But I can do PAPs in the office. But once you have a condition that requires gynecological care, then I'm supposed to send you along. So, and that's what I do. All right. And there are certain screening tests that you want to get regularly. It's controversial. Should you get a mammogram every year, every couple of years? Probably you should get one every year. Especially if you have any kind of risk at all. And mammograms are quicker and more diagnostic than they used to be. You want to get colon screening. And so if you have symptoms, you want to get colonoscopy. You want to have a relationship with a gastroenterologist and go get at least one colonoscopy. They'll probably tell you if you're absolutely fine, you're not going to have to do that again for 10 years. If you are a very low risk of having any kind of colon issues, you can do something like Cologuard or some kind of an occult blood testing. Cologuard does both blood and DNA, and it's very non-invasive because you're just providing a stool sample, and then the stool sample gets sent out and checked. But the only thing with Cologuard is you have to do Cologuard every 3 years. And if you're doing just a fecal occult blood, you really should do that every year. And those are not a big deal to do because they just require you. They don't require any kind of fasting or prep. They just require you providing a stool sample. And so those are easy to do. So reaching out for help is always a good idea. If you are getting checked regularly is very important in terms of your health. So don't be afraid to go to the doctor. Find a doctor that you like, even if you have to work for a while to find one. And it's getting harder for my patients because doctors retire, and then they have difficulty finding new doctors, and that has become an issue in recent years. So finding a good physician that you trust is a good idea. And you don't want to just watch Radio Naturopath or listen to Radio Naturopath. You definitely want to either come in and see one of us or see some kind of a physician to get things checked. That's really important to do. The next thing I wanted to talk about was something I alluded to recently, and that's ageism. So one of the things about ageism that's interesting, it's one of the last socially acceptable prejudices and it's not socially acceptable, but people accept it, which is not right. So there's all kinds of stuff around the concerns about getting older. So, okay, boomer is an ageist comment. It's really not nice. When you say okay, boomer, it's like you're a young person accusing a baby boomer of not being with it. And, you know, when you should be respecting your elders, you know, you should be listening to your baby boomers. And even if they don't have perspectives that agree with yours, have a dialogue with them. But saying okay, boomer is you laughingly being dismissive. Mm-hmm. And when you are laughingly dismissive, or dismissive in any way, that's on you. It's not nice to be dismissive, and especially of people who are older and wiser and have a lot more life experience than you. So ageism is defined as discrimination against older people because of negative and inaccurate stereotypes. And it's very ingrained in our culture. We often don't notice it. And many organizations have DEI departments, diversity, equity, and inclusion departments, to tackle racism and gender bias. But age bias is often not on the radar. It's still socially acceptable in a lot of ways. I remember I was reading a book recently, and in the book, the main character, who was in her 20s, went into a senior center and was complaining about the smell, the different smells in the senior center, the smell of disinfectant, of urine, of age, of death, and how she just wanted to get out of there because it was bothering her so much. And I'm like, wow, the book is probably 20 years old. It's not that, which to me, 20 years ago is not that long ago. And I'm like, wow, that did not age well. Because, you know, if you are ageist, you know, the joke's on you because eventually you're going to be there. You're going to be old someday. There's just no way around it. And do you want some 20-something being prejudiced against you when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s? You know? But it's really, because here I am. I mean, I was in my 20s and now I'm in my 60s. Remember, people who are old were your age once. They were you once and they're not anymore. And they have a lot to offer, and being ageist and having attitudes. I mean, wouldn't it be better to be helpful and kind and then to listen to them and learn from them? You know, the longer you're on the planet, the more you know. That's just the way it works. So there's negative stereotypes, and they get ageism wrong, or they get aging wrong. Aging isn't all negative, and it's not, but it doesn't mean that we're putting on rose-colored lenses. But anybody who's aging will tell you that it's a full-time sport, and that
it's terms a professional of, sport,
a professional sport, and that right. And that you're, as you get older, you really have to pay attention to your health. The least little thing can go on with your health, and you have to pay attention to it. And I'm in a place where, I mean, I have a chronic condition right now, but if it's not one thing, it's another. If my knee isn't hurting, I'm getting tremors. If I'm not having the tremors, I'm having back pain, you know, and I have different things going on. And you always have to, and of course, we all have to be concerned about if we're getting upper respiratory infections, is it COVID or not? And what do we do about that? You know, so there's. So it is true that as you get older, you have to pay attention to your health more, and you have to get your rest, and you have all the things that are good for you to do at any age become that much more imperative the older you get. But there are researchers and activists who are working on changing attitudes towards aging, and that your age is a risk factor for discrimination. And there's an encouragement of more emphasis on aging in psychology. And so what do you want to do? So how do you bust aging stereotypes? It's a stubborn prejudice. And people of all ages, including old people, show bias against older adults. But how you express it can change. Younger people prefer hanging around with other young adults. And older adults, the preference becomes more implicit, that they, you know, you do want to hang around with people your own age, but it's also okay. You're more okay with hanging around with people who are younger. So attitudes that underlie age bias are rooted in things that are not true. Some of the chronic diseases and dementia, do increase with age, but lots of older adults have quite good health and quite good cognitive function. People age in very diverse ways, and there are great differences between individuals, and things aren't just as bleak as people think they are. So there is a study, Becca Levy is a PhD at the Yale School of Public Health, and she's working on ageism. She wrote a book called Breaking the Age Code, How Your Beliefs About Aging Determine How Long and Well You Live. And in the book, she talks about a lot of beliefs about getting older. And there's information that contradicts negative stereotypes, and there's also a strength that comes with aging. So the idea that people get less creative as they get older is certainly not true. I would feel like, I mean, I see that Ron, you know, he's very creative. I mean, and the thing is, if you're in a place in your life where you don't have to work as much, you have more time to think, so that in that time you can become more creative because you're not required to make it to work every day and, you know, get through your working life. And so if you have more time, you have more leisure time, that can create a wonderful time in your life to be more creative and spend time on, you know, working with people in New England. They love to work on the house. And people love to, which is what Ron loves to do. He loves to work on projects around the house. And a lot of my older patients, they like to work on their houses and make their houses a nicer place to live because they have time to look at it, think about it, and enact the projects. I mean, you have to put a lot of projects aside when you have to work every day. And I find that, you know, doing something like cleaning up a closet is too much for me right now between the needing to rest from working and needing to rest because of my condition. So that's the other thing. If you have a chronic condition and you're not working as much, you can take care of that chronic condition more because you have the time to do it. You have a chance to improve your health in a way that's harder when you're younger and when you're pushing yourself and when you're always working. There are all kinds of, she says that all types of cognitive abilities don't necessarily worsen as you get older. There are some cognitive skills like reaction times that slow down, but other functions remain robust and can even improve. When you're older, you become a bit better at orienting your attention and ignoring distractions. Again, because you don't have so much on your plate. So you can focus on the things you need to do. Also, the longer you've been doing something, so, you know, I find that I can be very efficient at work because I've been doing it for so long. I can be more efficient at charting. I can be more efficient at organizing my notes and getting out of the office earlier because I'm efficient at doing the things that I need to do. Letting go of things I don't need to do and then doing what's necessary. When you get older, you're not as fist in the air. Like things don't bother you as much. You're not as not that you don't see older people at protest. You will still see that, but it's not as big a deal. You're not as excitable. Like, you know, things that you used to get upset about and really make you angry. You tend to let go of things more, and you're better at regulating your emotions. And you're better at thinking about what's important, what's not important. You're better at deciding what's worth fighting over and what's not. And that comes with age and experience. It's like, and you know, you know, it's just not worth it to get as upset and excited. And so you can be really good at calming somebody down. And this is a place where you can offer perspective and healing to people who are younger than you. And that can be really helpful. There's this paradox of aging that when you're older, you might have greater happiness and life satisfaction, because you're, again, you have more life experience and you know how to put your happiness together. It's a U curve, and happiness levels tend to be lowest at midlife. How interesting is that? And so the idea is that in 145 countries, there's a study of in 145 countries, happiness sinks to a low water mark in middle age before increasing again through later adulthood. Mental health also can improve across the lifespan. So that's interesting. That middle age, that's you're the least happy. I think when you're younger, you have a lot of energy and you have the energy to have a lot of experiences and experience the world in a great way. When you're talking about that U-shaped curve middle age, you're probably talking about your 40s and 50s, especially your early 50s, because you're at a point where you've been working for a long time. And unless you're blessed to have a really blessed life where your work-life balance is excellent, most people in this country don't have a good work-life balance. They have to work too much and not get enough rest and not get enough time to enjoy their lives. That's just the fact of being the 99%, you know, whether not being super wealthy. So if you have to work a lot to maintain your lifestyle and you don't get enough rest, you're not going to be as happy as if you are... as if you have a better work-life balance. And so that comes to a head when you're in your 40s and 50s. And in your 40s and 50s, you're realizing that your working a lot and you're really exhausted and it's hard to get away from it. And so you may also have other concerns, like you have children that you're still caring for, and you may have aging parents that you're caring for. So that sort of thing starts to come up. And as you get into your 60s, you're looking towards retirement and starting to think about that. And so there's light at the end of the tunnel. And when you say middle-aged, middle-aged can include the early 60s as well. And so if you're in a place where, again, that you're still having to work and you don't have that work-life balance, then that can make it so that your happiness levels are lower. And so if you can work your way out of that, then you're going to tend to be happier and your happiness is going to increase as you get older, as you realize once you figure out how you're going to be in your later decades and you figure out a system for that and you don't have to work as much, then you're going to be happier. So that's why happiness will increase. So that's something to think about. That once you get into your 60s, I think the key is figuring out how you're going to manage your later life in terms of retirement, if you're going to be able to retire. People who can't retire might not be as happy, although they might figure out a way to manage to work less and also collect Social Security so that finances aren't as much of an issue and they can work less. The narrative that ages decline and burden and hurts everyone, individuals, families, communities, and society. And that was said by Nancy Morrill Harrow, who is a professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Some older adults need support, but mostly they're giving support and making important contributions to the workforce, including paid work as well as volunteering. And those are a resource and not a luxury. Ageism in the workplace can affect hiring and promotion decisions. And in medical settings, there are stereotypes associated with aging that can influence treatment decisions. And I've seen this. I've had older patients come in who are very tired and they have a lot of things going on and nobody has bothered to check their thyroid. And I'll check their thyroid and find out that they're hypothyroid and they're not being treated. And that all they need to do is they can get thyroid medicine. That happened with Ron. Nobody bothered to check his thyroid. And I don't know if I checked it or I got somebody to check it. And I'm like, your TSH is 14. That's no good. And so now he's being treated for hypothyroidism. Mm-hmm. And I've seen older patients come in and their TSH is too high. And I can't prescribe thyroid medicine for them, but I'm like, go back to your doctor. You're hypothyroid. You need some thyroid medicine. I'm like, why would you not treat hypothyroidism in an older person? This is something the organs can, if you have a genetic predisposition toward it, the organ can tire out and not work as well. And you have to treat that. And so, so I've gotten patients to go back to their PCPs and get thyroid medicine. So that's one that just blows my mind. So I try to make sure that regardless of age, people are getting their basic stuff treated, their basic nutrients, like they're getting their thyroid checked, their kidneys, their liver, their vitamin B12, their vitamin D, other B vitamins, folic acid, that are they getting enough of those? Iron. They're not routinely checked, and I make sure that they are checked in people of any age, because as you get older, you might be eating differently. You might not be eating as much, or there can be basic nutrient deficits that you have that you're not paying attention to. So So this is the thing that doctors may not get enough training in gerontology, in the field of aging, nor in geropsychology, the field of psychology and aging. And that can affect your practices. And so, I mean, I have a person come in, if they come in, they're who they are. And whatever their age is, I just relate to them. I relate to who I see, who is sitting in the chair, not necessarily by their age. I mean, their age is a factor, but I treat them as I see them. They become a three-dimensional person to me. They don't just become their age. And so I help them however I can. All right. And so then there are internalized messages about aging. So your own beliefs about aging can affect how you feel about it. Japan has one of the longest lifespans in the world. And people who go to Japan will notice how differently they're treated. They're celebrated in families, TV shows, even in comic books in Japan. So we have kind of an ageist culture in the United States. And so research also shows how there are societal messages around aging. They can impact your health and well-being. And there are cross-cultural comparisons of age-related beliefs. People who take in more negative age beliefs show more physical, cognitive, and mental health decline. But when you have more positive messages around your aging, then you can do very well as part of your age. And culturally, we don't do such a good job of that in the United States. And there are other countries where they do better. They do better, and therefore they have more longevity. So age-related beliefs can affect your health in a lot of different ways. People have negative feelings about getting older, might have more stress, which can be linked to the diseases of aging, and people feel fatalistic about getting older, might be less likely to do healthy behaviors, such as staying active. I'm looking forward to, I mean, again, my health, the way I look at my health, I'm 60 years old, I look at my health as a day-to-day thing. What's going on with me right now? I don't see any reason why, when I'm in my 70s, that I can't be on my bike. I mean, as long as I can get through this tick-borne illness thing, I don't see any reason why that can't happen. I'm going to do whatever I can to maintain my orthopedic health, to maintain my nutritional health, and to maintain my physiological health. And so I'm just going to keep working on those things. And day to day, I do what I feel like. If today I don't feel like getting on the bike, I don't get on the bike. I'm probably going to do some kind of yoga. That's why yoga is so wonderful. You can really do it at any age, and you can do it at a level that works for you. And I figure if I keep doing yoga, I'm going to be able to do more vigorous yoga as I get older. Yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong, those are things that you can do at any age. I mean, really, you can, as long as you maintain your health, you can probably do any sport at any age. I mean, who's that guy, Tony Hawk? How old is he at this point?
He's probably in his 40s, yeah. 50s. I don't know.
He's maybe in the 40s. But Tony Hawk is still doing...
Skateboarding.
Skateboarding, yes. So, and he will probably do that until for some reason he can't anymore. And you don't care about the fact that you're a certain age. I mean, me personally... We have people in our bike club who are in their 70s, 80s, and we have one guy in his 90s who's still riding a bike. And so if you have positive beliefs about aging, that can protect against dementia, even if you have a high-risk gene for dementia.
He's 55.
Tony Hawk's 55, and he's still on the skateboard. And I bet when he's 75, he'll still be on the skateboard. So the effects of your positive attitude towards aging go beyond dementia. That when you have negative self-perceptions, you're going to have a higher prevalence for the 8 most expensive health conditions among Americans. That's lung disease, heart disease, musculoskeletal disorders, diabetes, and injuries. That because there's so much ageism in the United States, we spend too much money on those conditions. So if you have a more positive attitude, you're going to be healthier. All right. So you want to challenge the ageist stereotypes. There's good reasons to challenge them, and it's helpful. That will bear fruit. The most effective interventions combine education about aging, you also want to increase intergenerational contact because their aging segregation is really a poor part of American society. Young people often have no contact with older people outside intermittent contacts with their own families. So you need contact. You often see events that bring younger people into nursing homes. But young people aren't prepared for interpreting that experience. They can leave with more negative views for aging. So going in with a positive attitude that you're going to be there to interact and get to know people, that's going to be more helpful. So So you want to, so there are intervention systems that are being developed to change attitudes towards aging. And they want to target middle-aged adults to change their attitudes towards aging. You want to make sure you're eating and drinking well, that you're physically active and you're managing stress. And so if you can manage those things, this is going to improve your health across the lifespan. So those interventions are going to help you as you get older. And they improve attitudes for younger adults. And when you strengthen positive aging beliefs, you have more positive perceptions about your own aging. And so we also have to reframe ageist systems. So that's why those DEIs, the diversity, equity, and inclusion, have to include ageism in them. And you want to have, there's an age-friendly university program as well. And so that's something that's nice. So that older students can come into universities. And in an increasingly aging society, people have to be willing to do the work to change attitudes. And psychologists as well can address ageism in their own practices. And you can also use cognitive behavioral therapy and interpersonal therapy to help challenge the underlying assumptions about ageism. So there are a lot of misconceptions and negative beliefs about aging, and they're often deeply entrenched. They can be changed. So there is an optimism that anti-ageism efforts are gaining ground and that we're on the verge of a social movement to bring about a more age-just society. So there you go, the more attitudes, good attitudes about healthy aging. All right, so I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to sign off now. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.